right. It's Sunday night. It's 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And once again, I am rolling in just under the gun. You're listening to The Ooze with your hosts, Jason Sorrell and T.C. Downey. T.C., what's going on, man?
What's up, man? How's your ass feeling?
A little burned, man. Get in here as quickly as I could. Jeez. Yeah, man. Just got the last tattoo client this evening wrapped up a little bit later than I expected, and so here I am, ready to do the show. So what's going on with you, man? What's up with you?
I'm finding out that the reason we always end up with these slide-on ends is because the nature of the tattoo business is that. The next sale could be in 5 minutes. So.
Right. Yeah, you always have to be ready for that next customer. And if you don't move fast enough, well then they're not going to stick around, man. There are plenty of other tattoo artists ready to do a tattoo right now. So I tried to schedule these things out and went just a little bit long tonight. So Saul, you got a new machine. What do you think, man? Have you tried it out?
I have not even hooked it up yet, man. I'm gonna kind of reward myself once I graduate from these classes with using it. In the meantime, I'm just using the standard ones that they gave me to start with.
Right on.
Which at some point I'm gonna have to take a picture of my little collection. Now I've got 4 different machines, so.
Right on. Have you started playing with it yet, like adjusting them for different jobs?
Oh, yeah. That I have been doing. And the newest machine, the one that I took that picture of, I've got that set up for like a real heavy shader.
Right on.
So, anyway, it's cool stuff, man. I'm still learning.
What else has been going on? I imagine that takes up most of your time.
Yes, it does. It takes up a ton of my time. I couldn't even get to the show yesterday. It took up that much of my time, man.
Yeah, I was seeing something on Sin. It looks like I couldn't tell what was going on for sure. If the Friday night show, if there were some questions as to whether or not they were doing a show Friday night or what was going on there, so you might not have been alone.
Right on. Well, I know they didn't. I don't know if they did Friday night show or not. That's probably a real good point. I should ask somebody or look at least.
Hey, we run a real tight ship here with you. If the show schedule, if it happens, it happens. Whatever.
Hey, man, we have almost broken the 45,000 listens category. We're allowed a little bit of leeway.
So, well, nothing's really been going on here. Just the usual, the tattooing, trying to get some artwork in. I'm actually looking at this just sort of a new venue, a new venue for me. There's something called Art Cards, or the acronym is ACEOs, and I, off the top of my head, what they stand for, I don't know, Art Cards something. But basically what it is that some dude, I don't know if it was in the 1800s or 1900s, got into the habit of drawing or painting on a real small format, like a trading card, like a 2.5-inch by 3.5-inch trading card. And what he would do is he'd create these real tiny pieces of artwork, something quick and easy. And he was engaged in different conversations with different artists in his area that he enjoyed, and he encouraged them to do the same thing and return these little art cards to him. It kind of caught on and became popular. So there were a lot of people who got into trading art cards back and forth. Artists would trade these art cards back and forth amongst themselves. And then other people that were interested in the work, they also started getting into collecting them and, seeing if they could get these different artists to send them a little art card. And most of them initially were original art cards, but then you've got people who actually made prints especially, you know, if you have people that did printmaking or stuff like that, they'd run a series of these little tiny cards, and you could get, you know, it's an art print, but it's still, you know, whatever. Now, of course, it's being done digitally and stuff like that. So there's a guy on FetLife that does this thing, and he kind of turned me on to it. And it's just something that it's kind of quick and easy. I'm still trying to figure out what I'm going to do with it exactly. But it's kind of cool. I've always been interested in collecting artwork from other people. And the idea of being able to, you know, trade back and forth little, you know, baseball card size pieces of artwork. I just find it appealing. So I'm trying to figure out what I'm doing with that.
You're going to have to draw a few cards?
Well, yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I don't want to take any of my pieces that I have right now and actually, you know, just reformat them to size. What I'd like to do is make sure that I do maybe like 5 original pieces of artwork, and then maybe have a limited edition print of each of those 5 pieces of artwork. And what I'm thinking of right now, because the intent is that you trade the pieces of work. It's not necessarily to sell them or anything like that. So what I'm thinking of doing right now is the 5 original cards I'll hold on to trade with other artists or, who are doing the same thing. But then the prints I make, the limited run, maybe like 50 each or something like that, those will be available to anybody on the website that wanted to just send me a post-stamp envelope to have me mail them out. And I'd mail them out, one or whatever, if they wanted one or if they wanted it random. I haven't figured it all out. I mean, I'm still working it out, but
right,
I got that going on. I'm working on zombie versions of the different Mario Brothers characters for a local show this summer. I've done Mario already. That's on the Facebook site if anybody hasn't seen it yet. And I haven't put it on the Creative Eye Studios site, but I need to do that tomorrow. So tomorrow I'm going to be tweaking the website.
Oh, yeah?
And, look,
you're finally going to touch that mess?
What's that? Yeah. I need to there's so much shit that, and it's just moving so fast that, I mean, there's just so much shit that I need to update on the site that needs to be going on. A couple of different magazines and a book have used my artwork, and I plugged them last week on the show. The Corvus Nocturnum's I, Lucifer book has some of my artwork in it. So just keeping up with all that, these different little things. And then I guess the other thing is I had some dude ask me about the Sin merchandise. And, specifically if the Worms View piece, the bondage piece where you're looking up from, you know, basically from the girl's pussy up at her face and she's kind of, tied up or whatever, if that piece could be put on a hoodie and then, something with, Satanic International Network on the back of it and everything, just like a custom hoodie. The problem with that particular image is that Cafe Press, who we use for our printing right now, frowns on that kind of graphic artwork. So I go to upload that thing, and they flag it almost immediately. So that's not going to happen. And the hoodie thing with, printing on the back, I haven't found a printer yet that does, the piecemeal kind of thing that we're doing with it being printed on the back. If I wanted to order 1,000 of them, that wouldn't be a problem, but I'd have to throw down, $5,000 to make that happen. And it's just, that's not happening for fucking one hoodie. So
put a Band-Aid over the no-no spots?
Right, yeah, I could do that. I could put some sort of sensor bars or whatever, but I don't think that's what the dude was going for. That's the thing. I think he wanted the full-on, the full-on effect of the art.
Put Censored by Cafe Press on it, man, and make a fool out of them.
Oh, right on. Well, this dude's in a band, I guess, and he really wants to promote the Satanic International Network. And for those folks who are listening, if they haven't been to the Satanic International Network, it's www.satanicinternationalnetwork.com, so definitely check that out. But he's in a band, he wants to plug the network. I think he said, especially since like My Satan or something else, the 600, I don't know what got shut down. Whatever shit got shut down, he's a refugee from that place, and now he's, he wants to promote Sin on his during his shows. So
the irony.
Right. Well, I sent him a message and said that pointed him out to the Sin logos we did, the Sin stuff we did on Creative Body Studios. Because that page is still up. It's just that nobody's bought anything. Nobody's bought you know, stickers or T-shirts or whatever, and just send them directly to it. I was looking at the Demon Girl, and I'm not happy with that anymore. You know, I was happy with it when I drew it originally and everything, but the more I look at it, the more I'm like, you know, I've done better shit since. So I think I'm getting ready to create something new for Sin. Again, same thing, just as a merchandising vehicle to help promote it and see if I can scratch up a little jack for Zach and the Sin Forum. And we'll see. I mean, all kinds of shit that I'm trying to get around to doing. Another thing I'm looking at is, again, with the bondage art and everything, I'm looking at trying to hook up with some artists here locally that are doing the same thing, erotica and fetish art, and seeing about doing some sort of collaborative show, even if it's just a weekend, which means, you know, renting a space and, you know, setting it up and doing the big, you know, show opening and everything. Probably throwing down, like, you know, $100 to $200 a pop each artist to participate, and trying to get the wheels rolling on that. So it's I've been busy.
Sounds like it. You wrote a fucking book for tonight.
Yeah, well, yeah, I sent you those notes, and for those kids who are looking at getting into radio in the future, it occurred to me that we should start having some sort of, you know, show notes, basically, prep notes, show prep notes or whatever, something, when we're going to talk about a certain topic. And I'm not sure how they do it in the big leagues or whatever. I wrote out a bunch of stuff on tonight's topic. And I sent TC a real quick synopsis, a list of little blurbs, basically, of different things that that we might hit on. That way, he has kind of a heads up on, you know, what I might be bringing up. So he's got an opportunity in advance of the show, hopefully, to kind of formulate some thoughts on what's going on. I'm gonna do the same thing for Rotten Biohazard on Tuesday night. I'll make sure that, you know, Monday or Tuesday, like tomorrow or Tuesday, he'll get some show notes or some show prep. I think what we're going to do on Tuesday night, we're going to talk about the Girl Scouts. the Girl Scouts of America. Have you heard this shit about this? You got this kid. He's like 7 or 8 years old, and he's a boy, but he identifies as a girl. All right. Now, I don't know how that happens. Personally, I don't know how a 7 or 8 year old makes that decision, but that's the case. You know, then that's what's going on. So. And, you know, I guess I would, you know, I support that decision or whatever. I don't know how far I would take it as a parent, but his parents have, he identifies himself as a girl, and he wants to be in the Boy Scouts, okay? Or not the Boy Scouts, I'm sorry, not the Boy Scouts, the Girl Scouts. He wants to be participating in the Girl Scouts as a brownie or Girl Scout or whatever the hell that deal is. So the Girl Scouts of America, they had to make a decision. They had to decide, okay, are we going to only be an organization for people who are of the female gender, you know, naturally, or are we going to be an organization for girls, which would include anyone who identifies as a girl? So they decided to go with the latter. They decided they're going to support this kid's decision to identify as a girl, and they allowed him to participate in the Girl Scouts. And apparently he might not even be the only one. He might not be the only boy participating as a girl in the Girl Scouts. And there's this big to-do over the whole thing, of course, from the Christian right. And one Girl Scout has kind of made a splash this week or this weekend or recently. She is a Girl Scout. She's 14 years old, and she is banning Girl Scout cookies and encouraging other kids to ban Girl Scout cookies right along with her. So we're
banning Girl Scout cookies?
She's a Girl Scout. She's going to ban Girl Scout cookies and encouraging the public to also ban Girl Scout cookies until the Girl Scouts reverse their decision on allowing this little boy to participate as a girl in the Girl Scouts. So it's just a kind of fucking circus that attracts my attention. So we'll be talking
right
about then. That. Yeah. So check that show out. That might be as funny as last week's show, I guess. Tonight, we're going to be talking about The Matrix, and specifically it's The Matrix as it relates to the work of Gurdjieff and what we see going on in the world around us right now, what, you know, the way these things can be, are applicable, these little lessons that crop up in The Matrix. And it's, of course you've seen the show. I've seen the movie. I'm sure most people have seen the movie The Matrix. I'm focusing specifically on just the first film, The second and the third film, they go some weird way with the story. They've got different things they try to introduce and everything else. It kind of really steps out of the initial framework that was set up by the first movie.
Right on.
And I guess and the other thing I guess I want to point out is that there are some folks in our community who would take something, a fiction, like The Matrix, and run with it like in a ridiculous direction. Like, you know, they would found a whole fucking religion around it, or a whole philosophy around it, and try to make a thing out of, you know, being the one and all that other, you know, hoopla and everything. That's not at all my intention here. The Matrix is the ideas in The Matrix in the movie, the Wachowski brothers, when they did their story writing, it's obvious they drew heavily from not just Gurdjieff as a resource, but several other philosophical schools of thought to kind of create these different ideas. And there's nothing novel necessarily in these philosophies themselves. Gurdjieff was kicking around the beginning of the 1900s, the late 1800s, and he's not the first cat to sit there and say, we need to pay more attention to what we're doing. We need to be more self-determined. I mean, Socrates is doing it in ancient Greece, so, you know, this is not a new idea. It's just a Gurdjieff process, and the language he used was a little bit more novel. So, yeah, so that's what we're going to be talking about. And as we go through these things, if anybody wants to call in, the number is 347-989-1371. So, I guess we'll just get to it. I guess the first thing I wanted to point out is that somebody's typing in, you know, Jesus, not quite. So somebody was in The Matrix, in the movie, they shot the film in two different color formats. You had, when you were in The Matrix, everything had a kind of a green tone to it, suggesting, you know, the old school computer monitors where everything had this weird, you know, green color to it or whatever. You know, that reality was computer driven. And the when they would move into what they considered the real world, that had a bright color scheme to it. It had a more natural color scheme to it. And it got me thinking about how we talk about all the time when we have some really shocking experience. We have some real heavy thing that kind of turns our heads around, gets us out of whatever our funk is, whatever it is, some sort of shock, whether it's good or bad. One of the things we talk about is how all the colors are brighter. You know, we could hear the birds. We could appreciate the sunrise, all those kinds of things. So right off the board, or right off the bat, that's kind of one of the first things that I noticed about, you know, The Matrix and watching it, is that there's that they intentionally have that shift from, you know, the muted green tones to these bright colors when they're in the real world.
It's kind of like by definition in a way.
Right. And it's suggestive, I think, of what we are, you know, what we're trying to do. We're trying to awaken. We're trying to become more aware. Our lives as individuals are generally muted. They're generally toned out. We lose sight of ourselves. We lose sight of, you know, the different things that are going on, the things that should be important, that should drive us. And we are distracted by all these different things that go on around us. We become focused on trivial and frivolous things, and the colors become muted. So, you know, that there's all these little earmarks. Like when I really started studying the work initially and talking to people in the Gurdjieff Foundation about what it is to become awakened, what it is to really become aware, usually didn't have an answer for me. It was just something that you just did. And that lesson's also mentioned in The Matrix as well. But the Wachowski brothers in this story, they seem to actually find and pick out little things that are clues to you being on the right path, let's say, to you being going in the right direction. And one of those things is that reality, since just in your actual sense of it, becomes sharper, becomes clearer, versus, you know, the muted tones or the muted experience that most of us have. And so, you know, that was one of the first things, just, you know, watching the film. And,
you know,
I thought it was interesting. Go ahead, dude.
I was just going to say, the one thing I'd like to point out is the kind of starkness and difference between the two can almost be painful to us. Or have you ever been looking at something and it's just so bright it almost hurts? I think that's pretty relevant there too.
Right on. And later in the film, when they manage to get Neo out of the power plant and they bring him onto the ship, his muscles are atrophied. He's got to be rebuilt. His eyes, he asks why his eyes hurt. So it's that exact same thing. And Morpheus tells him, well, you've never used your eyes. Basically saying is that, you know, the reason that you're experiencing this, you know, this kind of overload is that you've never really looked, that you've become so used to seeing things through these different filters and through these different, you know, lenses that you've never actually seen. So that's why it's kind of painful for you to look now.
That part there in the film actually kind of made me think of Plato's cave. When I first saw it, I think that's something else that's of interest that you should note.
That what?
Plato's cave.
Oh yeah, exactly, exactly. And you're right on, man. Absolutely, it's the exact same thing. Plato's cave. All you see are shadows. All you see are the reflected, you know, the muted reflection of what's real. And that's what the Matrix is. It's Plato's cave. It's, you know, it's shadows of things, representations of things that are real. And you're not seeing the real thing. You're seeing, you know, the residual self-image is what they describe in the Matrix of these different people. Exactly. And that's how that's how most of us engage reality, is that we see things as we want to see them. We see things, the things that are important to us, those are the things we seek out. So we miss a lot of the details. We're egotists, so we're always looking for ourselves and all the people around us. So everybody around us becomes a reflection of somebody we are. So there's that filter that we're dealing with. And it's this, and there's this need. There's this urge. And again, it's not a new urge, so it's not something novel, it's not something modern, but there's this urge in us as a species, and maybe not every individual, to break away, to really begin to see things as they are, that we recognize that just going along, just being complacent, is not living up to our potential, is not beneficial to us. Now, I think that the majority of the people do not have that urge, or if they do have that urge, the way that we are programmed, the way that we live our lives, submerges that urge under a whole, you know, bunch of other things, so that it never fully develops. And that's I guess a concept that's also brought up in this film.
I'd like to maybe just point to the idea that guilt or the feelings associated with guilt seem to, in my opinion, be that blanket that kind of covers your eyes. So.
Oh yeah, and it's not just. It's not just guilt for transgressions or guilt for anything. It's guilt for about not fitting in. It's guilt for having your own ideas. Guilt about, you know, being selfish, wanting to be, you know, your own person. Guilt about not being a team player. And all these things are programmed into us. All these different, you know, all these different urges, all these desires to be a part of the system a lot of them are artificial, or they build on a small part of ourselves and inflate it beyond what it's supposed to be inflated into. I thought it was interesting that, you know, the other thing with this Matrix, I mean, if you think about this, this film could have been done, the type of story has been done in several different ways. I mean, Alice in Wonderland, Alice goes into another reality. You've got different movies where people they use drugs, where, you know, you're in this reality now, but when you take this particular chemical or this particular drug, you're in a different reality, or dreams or whatever. So different ways of shifting back and forth between one reality and another reality. This film uses the digital age, uses, you know, the digital medium. So it's using information, and that's where we find ourselves today. This is no longer, there's no longer an Iron Age or an Industrial Age or anything like that. It's an information age that we've reached a point where it's no longer about force or a physical thing that guides us, that our war, our conflict is an ideological war. that everything that we deal with is about ideas. We're no longer fighting about territory or even resources. We're fighting about, you know, what's right and what's wrong, what works and what doesn't. And, you know, that's what's driving us, our society. That's what's driving our economy even.
I think it's been the case that we've always fought about ideas. That's innately part of the human condition, is your argument over ideas. I mean, the ideas, obviously, I don't know, there are often different symptoms surrounding it. You know, like the idea that you have to have X amount of land, otherwise you won't and be able to produce enough food to take care of your family and your kinsmen or whatever it is. But, I mean, it's always been about ideas.
Right. Well, and to a point, I would agree with that. It's just that I think that now, whereas before it was, do we have, you know, there's the idea that we need X amount of land to provide the resources for our particular segment of people. While that's still prevalent, while that's still a real need, there are people who talk about this. We've been talking about this for decades, that there's enough resources being generated. There's enough food being produced. There's enough, you know, heat and electricity and everything being produced, that if it were properly managed, everybody on Earth would be fine. Everybody on Earth would have enough of whatever that is, would have enough to get by, would have enough to be comfortable. So we're at a point now where it's not so much about how much land you have, but it's about how you live while you're on that land. It used to be like I think about it this way, the Germans, Nazi Germany, okay? For the long time, the United States didn't enter into the war during World War II, because while these ideas were the source of the conflict in Germany, we were distant enough from those things that even though this ideological conflict was going on in Europe, it didn't affect us. We didn't have to deal with it, okay? Because, you know, the bottom line is they're on a different landmass, and while they have this ideology, the measure of their success is how much land can they gather. Now, it's about this ideology, because these laws, you know, there's this effort to change the way we live. There's this effort to change our laws or change our social standards, so that, you know, one day here we are having this conversation very freely, very openly in the public, and the next day we might not have that ability to do so anymore. That has nothing to do with land or resources. It has everything to do with, you know, the opinion of society and the willfulness or the willingness to enforce that opinion should it change.
Okay, fair enough, then. I could offer an argument, but in interest of moving along, I can accept those parameters. So.
Right on.
To me, it's always been about ideas, man. Always. Since the very first tribes decided to war against each other, that's why. It was, you know, the idea that this particular group was somehow better. They were separate of a higher fashion. I think that's really where it all roots from.
Right, and I would agree with that. Yeah, I would agree with that, that it's that in the past, you could always use another excuse. We're better than them when we need the land. Yeah, we're better than them and we need the land. We're better than them and their gods are wrong. We're better than them and they abuse their people. So there's always some other excuse. Now I think it's just more blatantly, we're better than them. Or, you know, we want to bring civilization to them. Or, you know, their moral values are skewed, whatever it is. You know, whatever the conflict is, it's no longer about, you know, because, you know, I really don't think the people in the Middle East want to come here and actually take over. You know, the people in Iran don't want to come here and take over the actual landmass. They just want to see everybody here converted to Islam. That if everybody here were to convert to Islam tomorrow, Iran would be done, you know, bitching about us basically, because we would have, you know, they would have won that ideological conflict.
Right on.
And the film, I think, just highlights that. The film just kind of highlights the idea that it's about information. It's about ideas. But that's where the new conflict, that's the new venue for the conflict, is the venue of ideas, purely, more blatantly.
Sorry, man.
Oh, go ahead, dude.
I was going to say, I'd like to point out that this a little portion of the movie has a great deal of common ground with the movie The Fight Club also, that, you know, that the battle is about ideas. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah, and that's kind of what led me to say, you know, we need to do a show on The Matrix, because we did a show on Fight Club, and it's the same, it's the same ideas, transgression, breaking away from the, not just, you know, not just fighting the system with the tools of the system, but actually breaking away from the system itself and engaging in your own sort of set of parameters, your own rules.
Right. Well, of the two movies, man, I definitely prefer The Matrix in terms of aesthetics pointing to what the actual symptoms of the problem are. So, I mean, good choice there.
Right on. And now The Matrix divides the type of people engaged in this conflict into three different categories. You have agents of the system. You have the Smiths and stuff like that. These guys, they're in these suits. They are tools of the system. They are part of the system itself. So this is what I think Gurdjieff or Uspensky in the work, these are the people that they refer to as the dead, meaning that their identities were so immersed in the system that they were indistinguishable from the system that they were actually engaged in. They no longer had any kind of personal identity. And I know that's a bit of a stretch, because in the movie, you know, these agents are self-aware, and, you know, they clearly have their own agenda and things like that. They have their individual thing going on. They're still more of the system than the next tier up, which are the majority of the human beings that are plugged into the system. The red pills is what they ended up calling them in the movie, or, you know, copper tops or whatever. The people that don't realize that they're in a prison, they aren't awake. So these are, as Gurdjieff refers to, people who are sleeping, that they are, you know, immersed in the system, they engage in the system, they're complacent about it. Things are just the way they are. They follow the rules. There's very few things they can do within a certain set of parameters, and that's just the way it is. They don't recognize that there's another possibility. There's more potential that they can be engaged in. And then finally, you have the blue pills. Those are the people that are asleep. The red pills, the ones that are awakened, the rebels. So this is Neo, Morpheus, Trinity, the whole people in Zion that they mention in the movie. And again, I don't want to go into the second or third films, because it kind of shifts the focus a little bit in those additional films. But these are people who are aware of what that is.
I was going to say, I'd like to point out that the awakened, the people who have actually come to try to awaken, they are classified by the system itself as being terrorists to the system. I think that's an important thing, because it's not like there's some romanticized rebel in the story, although the story line that we get, from the perspective it's told from, makes them a hero. But it's clear when you're coming from the position of the system that they are ultimately, you know, the biggest threat to it.
Oh, definitely. And that, I mean, that becomes clear later in the film. And this is something that people need to consider when they're, you know, considering this kind of path, and they're considering trying to walk away from the system, is that, well, first of all, it's an earmark. It's another one of those things to indicate whether or not you're doing it right. If you are engaged in some behavior that causes people, okay, in the system, whether it's, you know, government employees, police officers, your mom and dad, your clergy, teachers, whatever, if you get people that are starting to question what you're doing and starting to try to get you to stop what you're doing, you know you're kind of on the right path. You know you're actually doing something different or something that opposes the system. Because the authority, the system, will have a way of trying to deal with you, and they deal with it in usually in a harsh manner. Later on, when Neo Thomas Anderson, he's actually starting to awaken. He's actually being engaged, you know, by Morpheus and everything. They're starting to kind of come out of this. He's starting to really, you know, come to understand what's going on. Initially, when the agents approach him, they tried to get him to voluntarily comply with the needs of the system, You know, they say, you know, we want this other guy more than we want you. So we want you to work for us. And when he refuses to work for them, he actually tries to use the system's rules. You know, he says, you know, while they offer him this deal, he goes, you know what, that sounds like a pretty good deal, but I think I've got a better one. I'm going to give you the finger, and he flips Smith off, and you're going to give me my goddamn phone call. He says, I know my rights. You can't pull this Gestapo bullshit. And they show him, you know, that no, in fact, he has no rights because he is part of that system. He is a slave. We hear stories about this all the time. We've heard stories about this all the time since, you know, for decades. In the 60s, the civil rights movement, these people would be, you know, they would be rounded up. Yeah, they had rights. They had, you know, there were constitutional rights that were guaranteed to them. It didn't stop a cop from busting their teeth out on the streets. It didn't stop them from going to jail. And there are some people from the civil rights movement still in prison who they never did anything but protest. And they've just been lost in the system. So,
right on. Guantanamo Bay.
There you go. Guantanamo Bay, exactly. The shit that the Occupy movement runs into. These Occupy cats, man, they're doing what they do with the full authority or full authorization of the system that they're engaged with. And the point here is, you following the rules to try to get things to change doesn't affect change. We get callers every once in a while from outside the show or from outside our little circle of friends who catch the show, and they always, you know, when we talk about, yeah, I'm fighting the system, I'm engaged in doing something different, and what they do is, and this is my thing is, I'm going to do, you know, this. I'm gonna get a better job, and I'm gonna save more money. I'm gonna do whatever. And you know, we talk that way. That it makes sense to do those things. But along with those things that you're doing that are within the parameters of the system, you have to start trying to find things that are outside those parameters. Otherwise, you're just going to be stuck. Otherwise, you would continue to be fucked in the ass, and everything you're doing can be taken away from you at any moment.
Right on. I think that's I think all of this kind of in essence is neat because it does a perfect job of demonstrating why Gurdjieff referred to this as the prison. You know, in prison, if you're going to escape, the last thing in the world you want to do is be giving the guards a hard time the whole time through. You want to do your bit. You want to look like you're fitting in, and at the same time, you know, you got your little rock hammer or whatever, and you're, you know, blowing your way out slowly day by day.
Now, later in the film, Morpheus actually defines this prison. Because the whole point is bringing Neo on board is that he wants to find out what the Matrix is. He senses it. He just wants to know what it is. So Morpheus tells him that the Matrix is all around us. You can see it when you look out your window or turn on your television. You can feel it when you go to work, when you go to church, when you pay your taxes. It is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth. The truth is that you are a slave. You were born into bondage, born into a prison that you cannot smell, taste, or touch, a prison for your mind. Morpheus tells Neo basically that there's these three different ways you can tell that you're in a prison. That you can see when you look out your window or when you turn on your television. When you look out your window, if you live in a city or you live in a rural area, you'll see nice orderly lines. You'll see nature being defined into different segments, into different sections. If the land mass around you is being defined in that way, and being controlled and managed in that manner, why wouldn't the resources within that landmass, you know, from the plants, animals, to you yourself, not be managed in that same way? And television, they call it programming for a reason. The second thing is you can feel it when you work, when you go to church, when you pay your taxes. When you submit to that system, you go to work because you have certain bills you have to pay. That's a form of submission to that system. When you go to church, you're going, you know, social obligations, traditional obligations. When you pay your taxes, you're bid for, you know, king and country. You're engaged in the system and submitting to the system in that way. It's the world that can pull over your eyes to blind you from the truth. So, yeah, it's exactly, you know, Gurdjieffian all the way, you know, this idea that, you know, is this prison that we're engaged in. And, you know, it's the prison that we deal with in reality, you know, for what that word is worth, it's much more subtle than what we have expressed in the Matrix. It would be interesting to discover that, or it'd be easier, I think, to discover one day that we were all plugged into some sort of machine, and what we're experiencing was being fed to us by a computer program. That's not what we have to deal with. That the reality that we shift from the reality that we engage in with the system, this artificial reality, into the real reality, the line between those two things is much more subtle. It's much more ethereal. And it's easy to, even if you discover it, even if you manage to break through that barrier, it's easy to fall back in. In the Matrix, it was difficult to plug you back into the power plant. In what we're dealing with, you might get out just enough to realize that you've got something else, that you can do something more, and you might fall back in because you become complacent in that idea. And this is something that's also expressed in the Matrix. So there's, as you watch this film, you see that Neo doesn't go through one awakening, and everything becomes clear for him instantly, and he's moving forward. He goes through this cyclical process where, let me get to my notes here, where he's
supposed
to unplug, and hang on a second. Initially, he's informed of the idea that he's in a prison. He's in a situation that sucks, basically. He becomes aware of this through his own experience. He begins to – the information leads him to test these ideas for himself. And this is very – this is very Gurdjieff. Gurdjieff says, don't believe anything I say. Check it out for yourself. You know, if you don't believe you're in a prison, try doing this, try doing that. See, you know, see for yourself what the parameters are. So he goes from being just informed about it, a casual, you know, information about what's going on, to becoming aware of it through his own experience. Through that awareness, he begins to believe what, you know, what he's being told. This is one of the sticking points that TC and I have had with other people who engage in the work, who are talking about Gurdjieff, the idea that belief is reality, that belief, you know, is enough. And I disagree, and this idea is pointed out in the Matrix. It's not enough simply to believe. You have to have conviction. If you've got to go from I believe the thing to I know to be true, balls to bones, as the Oracle points out, it's the truth. It's no longer belief. It's an unshaking conviction. And conviction comes from actually testing and confirming whatever it is you think you might know.
Right, and I mean, there's always the factor, too, that some people will wake up to this and be awake to it for a while and see themselves as preferring, as needing to fall back into that sleep, that they just can't hack it outside of there, as is suggested by that one dude in the first film. I'm trying to remember what his name is in the film. It's like Thaddeus or something, the guy who ultimately... What's that?
Cypher.
Yeah, that's it. That's the dude. That's the dude right there. I mean, he's a perfect example of that. I mean, to him, it was better to live the lie.
Right, right. Well, and that's something else that that Gurdjieff points out, that, you know, this process of awakening is not going to be easy. And when you awaken, it's not going to be fucking cake and roses. That it's the reality you end up facing will be harsh. This is something expressed in the Matrix. He goes from, you know, and the Anderson character goes from, you know, he's bothered by this idea that he's living a lie, but it's a safe lie. It's comfortable. It's easy. You know, he just has to go to work, do what he's told, you know, wear the right clothes, do the right job, go back home, and he can have his life, you know, in that nice, safe, secure pattern. But when he gets out, when he wakes up, I mean, he goes from, you know, he wears a suit and tie to work. When he's on the Nebuchadnezzar, when he's on this ship, he's wearing hand-me-down clothes that are being, you know, they're barely being held together. They're falling apart. They're dirty. You know, he himself is filthy. These people live, you know, they're at war. They're at this constant conflict or whatever. But the difference between, you know, they're dealing with it. They prefer that experience over what they had in the Matrix because it's real. And that's what's important.
Right on.
I mean, we talk about the same thing here. that, you know, we need to, if you're going to be engaged in this kind of thinking, getting out of your comfort zone, getting out, you're going to, it's almost a given, because all of the things around you that make you comfortable, for the most part, have been handed to you from on high, from the system. You've been told this is the thing you need to have. You need to keep up with the Joneses. You need to have this particular car and this particular sound system, this particular television, and watch these particular shows and do these particular things. And that's where you're, that's how you should define comfort. You know, when we were kids, I mean, comfort to me when I was a kid was rolling around in the dirt and climbing a tree all day. You know, that was comfort to me. You know, that, you know, no longer is that the case. So yeah, it's about, you know, you have to be able to, you have to be willing to break out of that, and you have to understand that, you know, the becoming awakened doesn't necessarily solve your problems. It just gives you a clearer view as to, you know, what's actually going on. So
I'd like to point out that in this, before we bring the caller on, I was going to point out that in the first movie, it's not really even that they're prepping up for war or anything. They're literally on the run. But anyway, go ahead. Let's bring that caller on.
Okay, let me punch him up here. 605 area code. You're on the ooze. What's on your brain, man?
Hi. My name is Vitality, and I have a few questions for you.
Okay.
One, I am a pretty big fan, and two, I would like to know how big is your cock, and what are you wearing?
Cece, do you want to take this one?
No, I really need to know this. This is really important.
It sounds brilliantly important. Personally, I'm hanging a nice, six centimeters, something like that. And what was the rest of the question?
I would like your cock in and around my mouth.
Oh, okay. Well,
you can call me anytime. Text me, please, with nude photos, if you will.
All right. I'll have to get a better camera.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Oh, she went away.
Yeah.
That was an interesting little aside.
I don't know where the hell that came from, but...
No kidding. But thanks for... pointing out once again that we have this incredible fan base. Just to kind of meander off into this tangent and everything else, it is interesting the number of different people that are actually catching the show. You said we're approaching the 45,000 listen mark?
Yeah, we're approaching the 45,000 listen mark, yes.
That's crazy. So it's cool that we're reaching out to this this number of people, and it's always interesting to look in the chat room and to see all these different guests, people who, you know, we don't know, who have signed in and they're checking out the show. And some of them we do know. Some of them made a point to, you know, let us know when they're off someplace that they're listening or whatever. They might not find it with their name or whatever, but they're listening, and they listen regularly. So anyways, I guess I'm actually trying to call me right now. Weird. Let's see. This development, this process, let me regather my thoughts here. A little flustered. So this process of becoming informed, then aware, then believing in what's going on, and then being convinced, having conviction in what you're experiencing. Neo goes through this process several times in the movie, not just when he's initially awakened, pulled out of the power plant, but he has to be reconvinced again. You know, they plug him back into the Matrix. They take him through the construct. They show him again. You know, this is what's going on. They take him through the jump program. They take him through, you know, the agent training program, where he gets to see that everybody that's not awakened is a potential enemy. And that's one of the lessons that you have from Gurdjieff. And this is another thing that it's a point of contention, is that there's this urge among some to try to awaken or try to help everybody who is asleep, that we should be trying to awaken all these people. Well, you can only do so much, in my opinion. You can only do so much to wake other people up. And the problem you run into is that most people who are asleep, most people who you're going to deal with, don't want to be awakened. They don't want to deal with, you know, the kind of things you're dealing with. They don't want to look any further than where they've been told to look. So these people actually will oppose you in your efforts. If you're doing something differently, more often than not, the one of the, I guess, the magician's maxim, where silence is necessary. That, you know, that's key to your survival. That's key to your process in your evolution, your waking up. But as we kind of pointed out in the beginning of the show, this isn't a new idea. So what you're seeing in the individual in a smaller kind of cycle where you become informed, aware, you believe, and then you have conviction, we as a species, I believe, are doing the same sort of thing over and over again, which is why we've moved from, you know, these tribes who, you know, engage in these different activities or whatever, who go through these different processes, cultures rising and falling. So now we have a whole world that is, you know, is basically tied to one another. We know what's going on, you know, halfway around the world. 50 years ago, we could give a shit. We wouldn't know what's going on halfway around the world until a week or so after it happens. Now we know instantly. Now we know, you know, that the shit that happens in the Middle East affects us here the very next day. That kind of thing's going on. So we are, as a species, becoming more and more engaged. And the more people that become aware that we have a greater potential than what we have right now, the faster that evolution occurs, the faster that continued upward cycle occurs.
Right. So, now, I would actually like to point.
Go ahead,
go ahead, bring that caller on, man.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
What's your point? Okay. 619 area code, you're on the ooze. It's on your brain, man.
Yo, am I live? Am I on the ooze?
Yeah, you're on the ooze.
What's up, Bush?
I just picked up my cell phone, and I come home, I'm a hardworking man, you know, and my girlfriend is talking about, like, putting somebody's cock in their mouth and shit on my cell phone that I paid good money for. I mean, what the fuck you guys all about, you know? What you got? How you know my girlfriend,
about,
man? Talking about
we're about putting our cocks in girlfriend's mouths. That's what we're about. We're about putting our cocks in your girlfriend's mouth. And your mom, if she's available. I mean, we love the ladies, man.
Yo, well, what the fuck, man? You know, I'm a hardworking man. You know, this bitch don't even fucking use her cell phone. No, she used my cell phone because she had a fucking minutes and shit. What the fuck? You guys think you're funny and shit?
Yeah, we think we're funny. We think we're fucking hilarious. And your girlfriend, man, she's the best little cocksucker in your area code, man. She's awesome.
No, man, you don't understand, man. That's some personal shit between me and my girl, you know.
You don't understand. It's not personal shit between your girl. She's sucking our cocks. So obviously it's personal shit between me and your girlfriend. That's what's going on when she's sucking my cock. When she's sucking your cock, that's personal shit between you and her. But, you know, with me and her, it's a whole new level. So if her mouth looks a little stretched and she looks like she's been yawning a lot, that's because of me, dude. You can thank me for that.
Yeah, okay, well, then you can pay your fucking cell phone bill. You tell that bitch to stop using my fucking cell phone, you know, because she's going to be talking about, you know, putting your dick on the fucking rubbing her mouth and shit. You know, it's fucked up shit. I pay for her fucking cell phone. You want to pay for that bitch's cell phone, you pay for that bitch's cell phone.
Yeah, send me the bill.
Motherfuckers. I tell you what, man. You ever cut to New Jersey, man? Yeah. Give me $20, and then you could do whatever the fuck you want with that bitch.
So she paid me, dude. Wow. Not as good as we were on. What was that? Christmas night? Was it Christmas or?
It was
New Year's?
It was Christmas night. Yeah.
Not nearly as good as we were. I mean, it's you think you could do better. You think you'd be a little bit more impressive. You know what you should do is when you call in, lead us a little. Act like you're actually listening to the show, like you're interested in the topic, and then go off on some tangent. You know, try to get us to to engage in what you're saying, you know, and get us going on, you know, oh, well, you know, try get us to try to deal with it because you were so much on board just a moment ago. That would be, you know, that would be awesome. That'd be a great go. So,
yep.
Real quick, you had a point you want to make, dude?
Yeah, actually, I did. I wanted to say that the one point in contention I kind of have in differential from what the film suggests is that it really seems to be that there is more of a tendency for the sleepers to become Asians than what is suggested in there, or the dead, as Gurdjieff would kind of point to. I think the further along we go in some linear time stretch, the more it seems like you have agents and not necessarily just innate sleepers. There are people who, you know, they pick up the flag and they run with it. It seems to happen more than not anymore.
Right. Well, anybody who's not thinking for themselves means that they're letting somebody else do their thinking for them. So you're exactly right. It's what we've got going on. If you're not thinking for yourself, and somebody else is doing your thinking for you, which means that you are an enemy to anybody that actually is thinking for themselves. That when you engage in somebody, when you actually run into somebody that thinks for themselves, you will parrot whatever bullshit your parents told you, your teachers told you, you know, your priest told you. You'll parrot shit straight out of the Satanic Bible because that's what you think is right. You'll parrot whatever little bullshit you want to parrot, and you are, and for all intents and purposes, an agent of the system. You don't have to be a cop or anything to be that kind of person, to be that kind of blind person. Your whole argument is, you know, when you deal with somebody who thinks differently than you do, and you're dead set, and you're not somebody that thinks for yourself, then your whole argument has little to do with whether the person is right or wrong, because you're not interested in investigating that. If you were interested in investigating whether that person was right or wrong, that would mean that you were actually, there was a glimmer of self-determination. There was a glimmer of thinking for yourself. No, you're just interested in this person agreeing with the way you think, because if they disagree with you, then that shows that your investment in this, you know, person that's leading you, and this idea or concept that's leading you might be misplaced. And you don't want that kind of conviction, or you don't want that kind of faith shaken. You have belief. I mean, you see it with Christians, or you know, really anybody in any religion, the Christians being the ones we're familiar with, all the time, where it's not
hardcore
so much that they
atheists.
Right. It's not so much that they have any kind of convictions themselves. It's just that they have a comfortable set of beliefs, and for you to have a different set of beliefs means that they might be wrong, and they don't want to be wrong. Whereas people that think for themselves more often than not are open to the idea that everybody might have their own perspective on things, their own way of dealing with things, and become less concerned about what beliefs somebody else has. So we're at the top of the first hour here. What's up?
Oh, I was just going to say, and that kind of illustrates some of what's discussed in terms of consideration and influence in Gurdjieff's work.
Right on, exactly. It's that, yeah, it's something that if once you start thinking for yourself, it's something you have to start becoming aware of. You know, how much do you consider? How much do you I'm drawing a blank.
Identify.
Jeez, there it is. Yeah, how much do you identify with what you got going on around you? How on guard are you against identification? Is your considering of the things around you, is it an internal consideration or is it an external consideration? Are you taking whatever it is that's going on you, and is it changing who you are by your experience of it? Are you, you know, getting all pissed off or getting all, you know, overly invested in something trivial, or is it an external thing where you're able to isolate yourself from that event that's going on around you? And this, I guess, it's also brought up in The Matrix. They talk about, you know, they're when they reengage in the system. First of all, the idea of residual self-image. They have a particular way that they look in the Matrix that's different from the way they look in the real world. The holes and plugs things, that's one of the first things that Neo notices when he finally comes to in the real world and he's able to deal with the reality around it. He notices he has these holes in his arms and these plugs in his head that weren't there before. We all have a particular image of ourselves. And we believe that's who we are and how people see us. We also have a particular image of the things around us. The images we have are inaccurate. It's, you know, we're filtering everything we see through our own experiences, through our own, you know, chemical processes, through whatever. So we have a very skewed image of self. It might be overly positive or it might be negative. There's a whole bunch of different things going on there. The way that they use that in the Matrix is these, you know, you notice that everybody in the Matrix, all these different rebels, they go from being, you know, filthy and dirty and, you know, kind of messed up in the real world to these, like, superhero-like, you know, beings when they're in the Matrix. That's external consideration. When you recognize that your image of self is false, and if you can have a consistent real or closer to real image, there's no reason for you not to project a more ideal self to the world around you and to use that projection of self to your advantage. That's external consideration.
Right on. I mean, it kind of reminds me of those old, I want to say just cartoons in general. I was going to point to Batman or He-Man or something where they use the holograph thing to kind of confuse their opponents. You know, you've got whatever, all of a sudden there's 16 Batmans around you and you can't figure out which one's the right one. Or he appears to be larger than he actually is in front of you, and so he's intimidating by that factor. But that's all representations of this projection. Well, because once you have an understanding of what your real self is, then it becomes a lot easier to manipulate what other people will filter as real.
Right. There's a point in the movie where Neo's sitting down. They're getting ready to take him through the process of being up, unplugging him through the from the power plant. He's looking at a mirror, and as he's looking at this mirror, the mirror itself initially is fractured. So he's seeing all these fractured images of self. This is related to Gurdjieff's idea of being – there's multiple – eyes. There's multiple individuals with any one being. We're composite beings, and that these eyes shift depending on the particular need. The shifting of self, the shifting of, you know, your personality from one type of person to another type of person to another type of person, depending on the situation, that's a natural part of being a human being. That's supposed to happen. The problem is that most of us have lost that essential self, that consistent core being that uses those individual personalities to deal with reality, to make the right decisions. Instead, we become internally considerate of those different things that are going around us. We instead of there being a consistent core self, when I'm working with a tattoo client, well, then I'm Tattoo Jason. When I'm working with my kids, then I'm Dad. When I'm with my girlfriend, then I'm the boyfriend. You know, these different things. There's this lack of consistency or lack of consistent self that has these masks that you use. So when Neo's looking at this mirror, part of the process is the cracks in this mirror, they kind of mend themselves, so the image becomes one solid image. And then when they go back into the Matrix, he has more control of this mask that he's using to engage in the world around him, because he has now this consistent, or this idea of a consistent being of self. And it's the same kind of thing. When they do pick up Neo initially to take him to see Morpheus, the agents have put a bug in him. They've got this little device that goes into his belly button and sits in his abdomen, and they're going to use it to trace his whereabouts or whatever to get an idea of what's going on with Morpheus. And they have to remove this bug. This bug is this idea that there are aspects of ourselves that while we can recognize on an intellectual level, we can recognize certain aspects of ourselves as negative or positive. We can observe this kind of behavior where we have this shifting of personalities from one situation to the next. But there are other situations, other aspects of self that we don't so readily recognize. We are either enamored with this idea that, you know, this is who we are, and we cultivate that and we go with that, or there are behaviors that we just don't want to admit, we don't recognize. So that idea of a bug is where Gurdjieff comes in and says, you know, you can only go so far in this process by yourself, that eventually you have to have a guide. And this guide will recognize those aspects of self because they've experienced it themselves. And they can walk you through the process of dealing with those different personalities that you might not recognize, which is in the film, Trinity removing the bug from Neo. And then when they do get Neo onto the ship, they talk about how his muscles have atrophied, his eyes no longer work. This is, again, Gurdjieff, is this essential self that he describes the essence of self only developing really until we're about 5 or 6 years old, after which you become so submerged in personality that it doesn't develop any further. So once you become awakened, once you become aware of this core self, it needs to be developed. It needs to catch up with you where you're at now, which is another point, I guess, is brought up in the Matrix, is that, you know, they talk about how they don't want to, they typically don't want to awaken somebody that's, you know, too young or too old because they have trouble dealing with it. So the older you get, the more set in your ways you become, the harder it is for you to kind of go through this process to engage in the work. So
right on. I always thought it was really interesting that when he's, you know, in his realist form, as you pointed out, he's dirty, he's in hand-me-downs, he looks like he's been working all day. And, I mean, I always thought that was a real, real heavy parallel between the ideas that Gurdjieff was putting forward and the work actually being, you know, physical exercise or a physical challenge or task being taken on.
Right on, right on. And it's, And that's the point I wanted to bring up about these shocks that he has to go through. But real quick, there's a point being made in the chat room about a guide, you know, I am the way. I wanted to clarify that there's a distinction between a mentor and a leader, having a guide or having a teacher, somebody telling you that this is the way you do it versus somebody showing you one possible route, one possible way that it could be done. And that's something that, you know, you look at these different people who talk about in the work about how you'll have fourth way masters. You have fourth way, teachers or experts. And based on my reading of the fourth way, it's always been a matter of, you know, everybody's a student. There's just different degrees, different levels of experience. So even Gurdjieff himself, it seems, was still trying to figure it all out, was still engaged in this process. And every day for him was, you know, a new experience. He'd seen a lot more than most others.
Gurdjieff talked heavily about a winding staircase of sorts. And if you remember, his description was that this person would always be, you know, just one level ahead of you. It never says that they turn around and say, follow me, but rather that you would recognize them as being on the path in the right direction and that you would choose them and follow them until your path split again. I mean, I think that was the whole reason why he wraps that section out by saying that they're, they may think that they know the way and be genuine about that, but in the end, they've gone down the completely wrong path, and that's his way of kind of dealing with the fact that a mentor of any kind is not necessarily somebody who is self-described in that way, but rather somebody you recognize as being just a little further ahead of you on this proverbial stairway.
Right, and this is something that they point out in The Matrix also, that when Neo is taken to meet Morpheus, he takes the red pill. So they go into this back room where they've got all this equipment set up, and they're going to plug, you know, Neo into these machines to figure out where his body's at in the power plant. He asks Trinity, did you do this? And she says yes. So he's just following her example. She's his most immediate example as to what the next steps might be. So she says he's just kind of on his own, by his own volition, following her guidance. Some other points, I guess, that were made. There's the idea, and I mentioned this kind of already, Alice, Morpheus points this out, he has this look on his eyes like a man who's waiting to wake up. You know, he's like Alice tumbling down the rabbit hole. Wonderland is a nonsensical, reality, basically. It's what's been lost to us in many ways. I mean, as children, We lived in a wonderland. Every possible day was something new, was something brilliant, was full of potential. And now we find ourselves engaged in, you know, very limited parameters. We only have so many things we can do. We only have so many options. So it's, you know, this awakening process. Again, another earmark is that the potential, the possibilities become far more expansive. Real quick, we haven't done this in a little while. I figure we just roll the commercial, take a little break.
Sounds good.
All right, man. So we're going to roll the commercial. If you want to call in, 347-989-1371 if you got some thoughts on The Matrix and Gurdjieff. And I saw the question on buffers in the chat room. I think we'll try to get that here in just a moment. So here we go.
Creative Oddity Studios. Creative Oddity Studios. Stickers, T-shirts, skateboard decks, lighters, prints, posters, and many other fine pieces of merchandise. It's some of the best damn artwork you'll find on the internet. The creative assault and meandering of Jason Sorrell, T.C. Downey, and Vanessa Lee. Coleman! What is best in life?
To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to visit Creative Oddity Studios.
Bondage art, digital manipulation, erotica, demon girls, fantasy, tattoo art, horror, occult, and we dare to call it artwork.
It's like candy, but for your eyes!
Check out our very popular books on the occult and Satanism, now available in hard copy and downloadable format.
Hoo-wah!
Check out our blogs on art, tattoo work, what life is like as a tattoo artist, social issues, philosophy, lowbrow culture in Austin, Texas, and eminentmind.info. You'll enjoy them.
If you can read!
Creative Oddities Studios. www.creativeodditystudios.com.
I like the naked girls.
Creative Oddity Studios.
All right, we are back. And it looks like Zach was trying to call in, and we were losing him. I don't know if it was when you were trying to pick him up or what was going on, or I was trying to pick him up or what was going on, but Zach, if you want to call back in, we'll try to get you on the air.
Right on, and I think Trinity or whatever her name was, the self-described cocksucker that called in first also tried to call in at one point. So I'm just putting that out there. I mean, I'm sure everybody would enjoy listening to that over this any day. But
right on. So
go ahead, right. Man.
Go ahead, dude.
I was just going to say, I mean, there's just a barrage of overarching, overlapping, interconnected ideas that are suggested between these two different things, The Matrix and Gurdjieff, if anybody really ever thought the two of them would be comparable. So I'm trying to think of, you could get into, the idea of that the influences themselves are not just of a digital medium, but they're ideological. And, I mean, that's kind of suggested with the Oracle and the fact that they, you know, keep plugging back into this matrix to go out there and, I guess, I don't know, win more minds, so to speak. Offer up the green pill a little more. I mean, I can't figure out what other reason they would have once they're out to go back in.
Well, I think that lies in the idea that your own awakening, your own awareness is always threatened by the possibility that you might go back to sleep. You might fall back into complacency or apathy or engaging in, you know, familiar patterns and familiar behaviors. That you might prefer comfort and security versus thinking for yourself. And it's easy to delude yourself into believing that you're awake. It's easy to convince yourself or to fool yourself into thinking that you are more aware. And we see that a lot. I mean, you and I have been doing this, you know, for a while now, and the people we deal with, we've seen, you know, examples of, at least from our perspective, of people who, you know, make all kinds of claims all day long about being more awake or more aware. And, you know, their behavior suggests, you know, just the opposite. And not based on our particular standards, but on the standards that have been expressed by Gurdjieff and Ouspensky and others that we've read, that we've come to learn. And it's just a matter of opinion. Nobody can know for sure if one person's more awake or not, but, you know, there's just certain inconsistencies that we see. So the idea of these people always going back into the matrix, plugging back in to try to wake more people up, to engage in whatever conflict they're in, to try to end this war, well, they're trying to protect their status as being awakened. They're trying to make sure that they maintain it. And I imagine this, man. You're in the situation where you wake up and reality is different, okay? Just like they talked about, that if you had a dream where you couldn't wake up from, how would you tell the difference between that dream and reality? Well, one of the things you would need to do is you need to constantly be re-engaging in one reality versus another, comparing and contrasting, so that you maintain a sense, you have that baseline, you know, level comparison, so that you stay awake. So we got our callers calling back in. And are you looking at the switchboard, man?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't tell which one's Zach. So,
Zach is the 619.
Okay. All right, so I'll go ahead and bring the 619 area code on. All right, hang on. Hey, Zach, what's going on, man?
Yo, my bitch ran off her cell phone. She called you guys back in.
She ran out on
the
hold right
corner,
now,
man. Said she was gonna go get a fucking Big Gulp and fucking chili cheese fries and shit at the fucking corner store. And the bitch fucking took off my cell phone. Is she calling you guys?
Yeah, she's on hold right now, man. Oh, TC brought her on.
Oh, I'm on right now. Okay, let me clear this up. My name is Vitality, and
Your mother named you Vitality?
Yeah.
That's some heavy shit to put on a kid, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
It's like naming a fat chick Temptress, you know? You never know for sure what can happen. What if you're boring? What if you're the opposite of Vitality? What if you're
My name is fucking Bitch, and Bitch, you better bring back my fucking cell phone, and you better get some extra chili on that fucking hot dog. I gave you fucking $2.50. Where the fuck is my fucking phone, bitch?
You know what? You can just go fuck off because I'm leaving you.
What? You can't leave me, bitch.
I'm leaving you right now. I'm digging these smart guys, and, you know my number, guys.
Well, where the
and
fuck you going to go with your chili fucking
why is my
corn
mouth
dog
hurt?
In your fucking big gulp?
I want to know why
me,
my
bitch.
Mouth hurts. My tonsils are just swollen from their cocks.
Hey, go talk to those guys. I just met my friends, okay? Anybody going to put their cock in your mouth, it's going to be me. And you know this.
They double-cocked my mouth.
What the fuck? You fucking bitch. You better bring back my cell phone and that chili fucking cheese dog.
You can get yourself. I'm leaving you. I'm sorry, babe.
What the fuck? You guys see what this fucking bitch is? You guys see what I gotta go through every fucking day? She takes my fucking cell phone and my
baby,
fucking...
Baby, no,
fucking...
Don't talk like that. Baby, you know I love you. But I dig smart guys.
Oh, man. But you out here talking about sucking Bezino's cock and Jason Sorrell's cock. I mean,
they want it.
You're gonna be bitch. Whose bitch you gonna be? You're gonna be my bitch, right, bitch?
They pay me better.
Wait a minute. They paying you?
I had to mute the conversation at that point because I am very much opposed to paying for sex. In the position I'm in, I haven't been in a position to even have the urge to pay for sex in a long time. So the idea that I might pay for sex when it's being offered to me freely in abundance, hot and cold running pussy here in Austin, Texas, that bothers me. What about you, TC? Are you in a position where paying for sex is a necessity?
I didn't even know you could actually do such things, man, so.
So let me bring them back on and get their thoughts on the whole paying for sex. So let's call bullshit on that right there.
Sex right now.
Hello?
Yeah. Phone sex?
Hi, hey, we had you muted for a minute while we discussed the idea that, discussed how we don't pay for sex, how we find that idea offensive, given that, we've got hot and cold running pussy both, in both places that we live.
Oh, okay. Well, that's I think we should just all have phone sex right now.
Yeah.
What
why would I have phone sex? Why would I have phone sex when I can just have the real thing? I mean, kind of,
because
you know,
I'm
vanilla,
better
isn't it?
Than the real thing. You haven't had phone sex with me yet.
Okay, get me off. Do your thing.
Well, you know,
send you
some pictures first.
Get me off. Phone sex. It's audio. Do it.
Okay. First, I need you to relax right now and close your eyes.
Hey, stop telling me what the fuck to do. Just get me off.
No. Okay, I'm going to tell you what to do. And if you want to get off, then you have to fucking listen. Got it?
See, she said, I muted her again. She said she was good. She was, you know, she was the best. She was able to do this shit and everything else. So far, I'm not feeling it. So far, she's just another fucking, you know, bitch talking shit. So okay. let me go ahead and bring the audio back. And I can do this for the rest of the show. Fuck it.
I'm actually just kind of chuckling here, man, because as far as I can tell, she always wears her seatbelt. So that in itself means she's just not going to be able to get me off.
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
Do your thing.
Okay, well.
Rub that thing.
Right.
Rub your, just do it.
I'm doing it.
No, you're not. I don't give a shit.
Okay. Yeah, I can't do this anymore. You guys suck. All right. I appreciate the show. You guys are fucking smart, guys. Keep doing what you're doing. I'm going to go back to touching myself.
Rock on.
Sad one. Awesome.
Hail Satan. Bye.
Bye. So we got another caller, 661. Let me ring 661 on here. 661 area code. You're on the ooze. It's on your brain, man.
I heard this girl likes smart guys. It's like, I've been to college and stuff. I hung out at colleges, like in the cafeteria. So that kind of makes me smart.
Yeah.
So, like,
could
you just, like, forward her my number? That would be cool. Yeah. I'm like, hey, Betty, come to Butthead. So, like, what, is she, like, still here?
No, she she hung up. We called her on her bullshit, and she got embarrassed.
Damn it. I wanted to score. It's like, come on. Like, can't you, like, call her back and stuff?
If we had written down the number, man.
Damn it. What the hell is your problem? It's like, she made a smart chick. She is smart guys, and like, I totally was in.
I just gotta say, this is particularly funny to me because you live in Texas, Jason. And if I remember correctly, this particular gentleman was caught beating off in a shed inside of a certain area in Texas.
Oh, yeah.
Cool.
A Beavis. They love Beavis. Ah! That's awesome.
Oh, hey. How's it going? So, like, okay, next time she calls back, you can, like, forward her my number and stuff, and, like, wait till we get it on.
We'll do.
If you want, we'll read it off live right here on the air.
Okay. So, what do I have to do?
You just have to answer one more thing that the Matrix had in common with Gurdjieff.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's like, we could be anything that we wanted to. we have to break out of this prison. All we have to do is believe in ourselves and follow the master. And it's like that was symbolic of Neil and stuff and Trinity, who was wearing tight leather pants. I could see her butt.
Let me bring Zach on too. Let's just get all the peanut gallery on the use. Hey, 619 area code, you're on the use. It's on your brain, man.
Hello? Am I on the air?
You're on the air.
My name is Hank Hill, and I sell propane and propane accessories. I've got a concern about my son's body. My son Bobby ain't right in the head, and I'd appreciate it if you know. He's just not quite right. Appreciate it if you guys let me know if he calls into your pagan show.
This boy sounds like a dumbass.
Show like, officially
derailed. Maybe you can like, smack him around a bit. He'd like be a man and stuff. And speaking of smacking, I want to smack that Trinity's ass.
Is she available? Hello?
Is she available? You were muffled, man. We couldn't hear you. You were had the phone too close to your butt.
That wasn't my butt. Sorry,
Let's just keep this cavalcade of craziness going. 585 area code, you're on the news. It's on your brain, man.
The TC call for a derailed show.
What the hell? This isn't Trinity. What the hell is this crap?
I will not talk for you, butthead, not again. No.
Damn it. It's like, she asked for
what
smart guys.
In Janice Claus,
where the hell are they?
Those are one
guys. Since we got you guys on the air, I don't know what we're doing next week on the Sunday show. Do you guys have any suggestions?
How about Trinity?
Maybe bring that vitality chick back on, see if she wants to do the phone sex thing.
Okay.
Oh wow!
I'd have to use the bathroom. I have to use the bathroom, but Beavis has been in there for like half an hour.
Damn it! I have to come out.
Have a contest where we have different girls call in and moan on the air. And then we, of course, take a vote to see, you know, which of the moaners did it the best, was the most convincing. That could be entertaining for an hour. But
yeah.
If we're going to do that, though, it's got to be we're going to do moans, groans, and grunts. It can't just be limited to moaning.
Let's go ahead and let's get a little precursor of this this Sunday show. 605 area code, start moaning like you're getting off now.
Hi, I'm from Jersey, and I just want to know if we can cover
hey,
the Jersey Shore.
Hey, 605 area code, I'm going to mute you. I'm going to mute you if the next noise you don't make is if you don't make a moaning noise, immediately I'm muting
Jersey
your ass.
Jersey Shore sticks are stupid.
Bitch,
like,
start moaning
Davis
now or
like
you're getting
Einstein.
Muted.
I just
605
want to know
area code.
If we can
moan,
just do the
moan,
Jersey
moan,
Shore.
Moan. All right.
Just
you're
moan.
Muted.
Moan.
You're muted. She's muted. Yeah, let's try it again. Let's try it again. Here we go. 605 area code. Start moaning like you're getting off now, or I'm muting you again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Just like
that's
that.
One obedient bitch right there. What do you guys think?
Yes.
That chick who does what she's told.
That ruled.
All right, and clearly that's all you're good for, so I'm muting again. All right.
Oh, I'm sorry. The phone was, like, in my pocket again.
Oh.
I doubt it was your phone in your pocket, bud.
All right, bring her right. 605. Oh, we muted her again. What the fuck? Hang on. Okay, there she goes. 605.
Yeah.
Right, you're on the air again.
Damn it.
You guys are a bunch of juice bags.
Woo.
No. You're the douchebag.
Well, I never.
It's not our fault you couldn't moan. But, you know, hey, if you come over to pick
Daddy I hear blah, 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 got sand in my vagina. I don't like the way I'm being treated on the ooze. Big fucking deal.
I just came here for some cock.
Well, you've come to the right place. So,
Beavis, will you dig those barnacles out of my vagina?
It's Butthead.
Yeah, Beavis is
or
still
whatever.
In the bathroom.
Yeah, right. The only thing you've done right, 605, since you called in is moan, so do it again.
Yeah. No complaints here.
I want Beavis, not Butthead.
I didn't say laugh. I didn't say ask questions or make demands. I said
like,
moan.
I'll tell you what.
You're getting muted again.
If I get Beavis out of the bathroom, would you still moan for us?
Maybe.
Damn it. Hold on a second. Beavis, get the hell out of there.
Out of there right now, there's going to be a chick that's going to move from. Whoa! Cool! Hold on. Hello? Who's that?
Hi, Beavis. My name's Vitality.
Well, hi, how's it going?
I love how you shake. I bet you're really good on bed. You can just lay on top of me and just shake. I want you to touch yourself right now while I moan, all right, Beavis?
I'm 2 steps ahead of you.
Are you ready, Beavis? Yeah, touch it like that.
Beavis?
Yeah.
Your hands out of your pants.
Wait. Yeah, like that.
I want to hear it. No, give me that phone. Damn it, Beavis, give me that phone. This is the greatest moment of my life.
I love you, Beavis. You get me off so much.
I think I got a cigarette.
Yeah, I need to go have a cigarette.
No, I don't smoke, but, like, when I do, I smoke menthols. That was awesome.
What the fuck has the ooze become?
And she went away. So I'm getting the feeling that a kind of highbrow intellectual discussion is not what our audience is interested in, from what I gather.
You think?
Yeah.
Davis just went back to the bathroom for some reason. He just took a 2-hour dump, and now he's back in there for like maybe another 2 hours.
Wow. Talk about getting plugged in, man.
No shit. I think we're fully identified with what's going on here right now.
That's what she said.
So, jeez.
So you
officially derailed, dude. It's
done. We tried, man. We tried.
So
I think Davis plugged into more than just the Matrix. He might need some medical assistance.
So we have about 23 minutes left.
Right on.
I
was going to kind of pose the question here. In the movie The Matrix, it becomes, you know, pretty obvious in the storyline that Neo develops kind of a thing for Trinity. And I was wondering if you recognized any parallels between that and Gurdjieff's work.
You know, I hadn't really thought about it. You know, I don't know if I do see a parallel there. Do you see something, or did you recognize a parallel there that I'm missing?
Well, I might be stretching a little bit in this, but at first the name Trinity. If you look at the Enneagram, you know, there's the little triangle right in the center and everything. That triangle is very symbolic of a certain particular aspect of the entire spectrum of things, and that aspect is the self, at least in a more, I don't know, archaic fashion, you know, the creation, stabilization, destruction, kind of, you know, three-way thing. So I think it's interesting that Neo, you know, kind of falls in love with his first shock, so to speak. And in a way, he kind of becomes identified with this version of self, or what might be considered some kind of a mirrored version of self.
Or it's the first real person he actually has any contact with. You know, the idea of Trinity, this is something brought up by Michael Ford in some of his books about Luciferianism. The idea of Trinity, that it's not the traditional point of magic. They talk about a pairing of male and female. So you've got the Ankh, which is, you know, the male and female symbol. The circle at the top is representing of the vagina, and then the rod at the bottom is representing the male phallus, and the line going horizontal is the horizon. So this is where the god and goddess meet. Michael Ford points out this idea that there's a third aspect of self, where you have this male and female combination. You also have this Leviathan urge to combine. So there's actually a three-part composite being engaged in a god and goddess union. So not forming a third being, but the third being's present in their mutual urge to know themselves through contrast with another. So the urge to conflict and procreate is a Leviathan urge that Michael Ford points out. When I think of Trinity anymore, that's what I think of anymore. You know? So, but again, that might be taking things in a direction that goes a little bit too deeply philosophical for our audience, I guess. So.
Yeah.
Go out and experience it. That's the bottom line. If there's a point to the show tonight, experience shit. I think that's the bottom line. That get out there, check things out, be bold, indulge. That's the big underlying value for the show. If your takeaway from anything, and that if you're a woman calling in here and you're trying to prank call us or whatever, you will be abused. That's, I guess, the other takeaway from the show tonight.
It's not like they weren't asking for it.
Oh, they were. She loved it. She loved every minute of it.
And she called back in like 6 times to get more, man.
That's right.
Just proof right there.
Yeah, she'd never been more wet in her life.
You know, the idea, the Trinity idea, just kind of occurred to me, and it's something I'm going to kind of go back and have to look over, because you know Gurdjieff does talk for a bit about developing the Trinity, you know, realizing the contrast between two polar ends and kind of awakening to its existence by itself is, you know, that creates that third prong. So, or what you were referring to as the Leviathan urge.
Well, when he talks about personality, when he talks about these different aspects of self, there's a dichotomy always. It's either this or that. It's this or it's opposite. It's, you know, positive or negative. It's always that way. Whereas the consistent self, it doesn't have a positive or negative. It just is. So again, the Trinity reapproached. You know, that you have the consistent self, and then you have a positive and negative reflection of that consistent self.
Right. And again, I really didn't have anything much with that. It was just something that occurred to me, because I know that the Trinity in itself is something that's important, at least from Ostrensky's position in the book In Search of the Miraculous. So,
right, and that seems to be where we are on, because I promised in the description of tonight's topic that we're going to talk about how all this applies to the world around us today. There seems to be a real search for self, this real urge to experience and define the self and to know the self through conflict, through contrast with things around us. We recognize that there's this artificial system. That's what the Occupy movement's about, the anonymous thing's about. The ONA, in a lot of ways, is about this contrasting of self versus the reality around us. And the Matrix is just one more expression of that same idea. That you can either do what you're told and be what you're told to be, or you can define that being for yourself. So
I think that
Zach, this whole thing that Zach was doing was just to show off his vitality chick.
I'm assuming.
She better be smoking hot, man, and she better show her tits on cam. Okay, well, if she's going to be in the chat, she better show her tits. So.
Right on. Well, I've only seen pictures that she posted up on the Sin site. I mean, the one commentary that I have to have is she's got that whole reverse bob thing, which just instantly turns me off. You know, that my sister cuts her hair the same way. It makes me fucking nuts, where the bangs are longer than the back, you know?
Oh, right on, right on.
Yeah, so, I mean, otherwise, she's got some pretty eyes and snake bite piercings, and that's pretty much all you can see. It's neck-up photos, so.
She's not a very convincing moaner, unfortunately. I guess, but, you know, maybe my standard's a little higher than some of these, you know, chronic masturbators that we've got listening to the show. And I'm looking at you, Darkpool. That's who I'm looking at.
Ken's in here endorsing this chick, so you know she's got to be at least how he spends half his afternoon. So,
yeah, Ken has pretty high standards.
Yeah.
So, 15 minutes left, and
right on.
Yeah, the show's been pretty much derailed. The topic's been
yeah.
I had a whole bunch more, but fuck you guys.
Yeah. I've got to honestly say, man, you really did a good job connecting the dots between the two. What I think would be kind of cool is if sometime in the future we line it up to a few other storylines as well. Like, you know, I suggested the Fight Club. There's a lot of heavy resonance between the three different ideas. Plato's Cave's another one that runs right along with it. The Avatar, that's one that kind of touches on all these same elements, too.
Yeah, yeah. There's Clockwork Orange, I would say. There's some of it there. What was that movie that Lucas did? Let me look at mine. THX-1138 is one of the films. Dune.
Right on.
Is full of it. Heavy with it. So yeah, might get around there. So Anyways, I got nothing else, man.
Derailed.
We're working on. We're still working on logos for the U's. That's something that we need to get around to doing. We got a banner on the U's page here on Blog Talk Radio that I think two of the hosts that are shown in the banner, or three of them, or whoever, are no longer participating in the U's. So we need to update that and do something about that. And we're both busy.
Right on.
So we're calling on our audience, basically. They have some ideas to float those by us.
I don't know if you saw, but on the oozradio.wordpress.com page, there's a little note left for us by Female Satan. She made the suggestion of a fist with the ooze, with ooze tattooed into the knuckles as the logo. I thought that would be kind of cool if instead of having like some kind of traditional bloodline where, you know, after the tattoo's done, it's just kind of bleeding out of the letters, but it's bleeding ooze instead of actual blood. And I thought that would be, you know, maybe something that touches pretty closely to what we had been discussing anyways.
So it's, something green instead of red.
Right.
Hey, I'm trying to log into the Sin chat room right now, and it's password protected.
Yeah. The password is 616, and then it's forever, but capital F, capital E, 666. So that's what's your way into that.
Okay. Oh, I see it. I see it right here in the chat room. All right. Crazy.
I haven't been there in what seems like forever, man, but I've been a busy boy, so I don't know if I'll get up in there anytime soon. I mean, when I get off of this thing tonight, it's probably straight to bed, pretty much. I've got to be up fucking right with the roosters crowing tomorrow morning to get back to my regular routine, so.
Right on. Yeah, I'm plugging into it right now just to see if this Vitality's nipples are pink or darker or what the deal is. So we're going to take a look at that.
Right on.
Yeah, we got about 10 minutes left, man. I know you got we ran longer than we have in a while. So if you want to wrap it up, we can wrap it up right now.
Either way, unless you got something better going on, man. I intended to stay here regardless until the show was done. So.
All right. Yeah, well, we can stick it out for 10 minutes. We still need to figure out, the other thing I guess we need to figure out is we need to push the call for donations from folks to help cover cost of the show. Again, this is not to pay for the show. We will be paying for the show. This will continue to be something that we pay for. But by getting donations from people willing to throw in a couple of bucks, what we can eventually do is show this that the show is a vehicle that can be maybe marketed to a larger audience on a more mainstream venue. So that's kind of the intent. So if folks have a dollar or two they want to send to us via PayPal, that would be awesome. I'm putting this out there just as everybody starts logging out. That's great. I don't know, man. Do you have any ideas or anything you want to talk about next Sunday?
I don't know. I'd like to do something a little more lighthearted. It seems like our Sunday audience is used to us goofing or I don't know, preaching hellfire and brimstone. Maybe we hit them a little bit. Maybe we hit them a little bit hard with the philosophical discussion tonight. They generally tend to tune out for those. So,
caused somebody to have a brain cramp and they didn't want to do that anymore. All right. I don't know. We'll think of something. Something stupid, and maybe start going that direction. Doing an hour show and doing something retarded every Sunday.
I know you've worked in a tattoo shop before. One of the things that we might cover at some some point is things that you can find on the bathroom walls of a tattoo shop, because I'm just absolutely enamored by them. So,
like the, on the artwork?
There's all kinds of stuff. I mean, like in particular, the place that I'm at right now, man, there's all these little quirky comics that have been cut out over the years. I mean, you can tell the place has been there forever.
Oh, yeah. Right on. So stupid shit that, yeah, that tattoo studios have hung up, like, yeah, comics and signs and stickers and, yeah, yeah. All right, man. That might be something to talk about.
I don't know if we can do a full show off of that, but, I mean, there's some ridiculousness there, so.
Right on. So, yeah. Tuesday night, I don't know what's going on for the rest of the week for the other shows, but Tuesday night, for those people who are listening, who weren't listening to the game of the show, we're going to be talking about the Girl Scouts, the recent situation where the Girl Scouts have admitted a boy who identifies himself as a girl, who's like 8 or 9 years old now, and the 14-year-old girl who's calling for a ban on Girl Scout cookies until the Girl Scouts of America remove this man child from their presence, basically. So check that out. We'll be goofing on that Tuesday night.
Right on. Cool. I'll probably try to at least listen to the archive, if not be there live. Just depends. Tuesday night's one of the nights I'm there till the end, so.
Yeah, right on. Right on.
Yeah. I'll be busy cleaning tubes about the time you're making jokes, so.
So have you got a chance to try metal tubes?
No, I have not yet. I'm wondering how much of a difference it'll make in the actual smoothness of the needle.
My experience is that you can get a smoother line with metal tubes. I started on disposables, and the guy who taught me, his thinking was, if you start on disposables and you learn to get a smooth line with a disposable tube, then when you switch to metal, you find it easier, although the weight of the machine, of course, almost doubles with some of those tubes.
Right.
So the machine, the overall rig is a little bit heavier, but because of the weight, for whatever reason, there's less vibration. There's less, it absorbs more vibration, and then it's easier to get a smoother line.
There is one particular type, and I'm not really sure what type it is yet, of metal tube that, I mean, honestly, I don't know why they make one that has the thicker inkwell inside of it when they have these, but it's a slimmer diameter tube. I mean, your traditional tubes are what, maybe, what the fuck? Sorry, guys. Your traditional tubes are about the same size as the temporary tubes of the plastic tubes. But these were, I mean, maybe half the diameter, and the little opening at the bottom where the inkwell is very wide in comparison. There's just a very minimal amount of space for the needle to actually go through to the tip of it. I mean, honestly, they're easier to clean. They seem like they're lighter weight and less cumbersome. So I'm not really sure why anybody's using thicker metal tubes when these are available. But I'm sure I'll find out as time goes through.
Is it a thinner grip or thicker grip?
It's a thinner grip.
See, I prefer the thicker grips just because it's easier on my hands.
Right.
That, you know, holding that thinner grip, you know, it's just, for whatever reason, it tires my hands out faster than having the larger grip. I'm not sure why that is. Maybe it's because I don't have, you know, I'm not closing down on it as much or something. I don't know why that's the case. But again, it also comes from, you know, what did I come up on? 1-inch grips basically is what I came up on. So, you know, I always find it easier to have a 1-inch grip on my tubes.
Right on. So I, I I'll find out what the real difference is as it goes. I'll have the availability of using both once I actually get started. And I'm, from my understanding, and I'm just killing myself here, rambling, but from my understanding, I should get on skin sometime this week, at least doing the permanent makeup end of it. So.
Right on. Awesome.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I've mastered the shape of the eyeliner, man, so.
Right on. Yeah, well, document what you do, and I know you've got your blog up now, too, where you're kind of documenting this whole process. It's a WordPress blog. I've subscribed. I don't have the address here in front of me.
It's adorningflesh.wordpress.com or something like that.
Right on.
Yeah.
So yeah,
I'm actually tomorrow.
Go ahead, dude.
Go ahead, man.
No, go ahead, man.
I was gonna say tomorrow, the next day, I'm actually gonna kind of put in a short little article on just things that I've learned as tricks to setting up your, you know, setting the needle in the machine and setting the right depth in terms of how far the tube goes down or whatever. I didn't realize there were so many different ways that you could do it, but I found that there's actually a position in which you can draw the maximum amount of ink into there without having too much of a puddle when we start to actually lay down your lines. So I'm going to put that in there. And another thing that I've learned is that if you slightly bend those needles, like, one eighth bend so that they kind of are working against the rubber band, it helps to keep that needle centered in the tube.
Right.
Yeah, so just little tricks that I'm picking up that I've been laying out there. And, I mean, I haven't gotten very far. There's only two posts on there, and I've got so much more information. It's ridiculous. But.
Right on, man. Yeah, the when you're apprenticing, man, you just get there's just so much. And if you get a chance, maybe somebody there has some even. If you get a chance to check out Machine Gun Magazine by Icon, a lot of good information in those magazines.
Right on. I will certainly check that out, dude. I've been doing nothing but eating, breathing, and shitting tattoos for the past 2 weeks.
It's awesome, isn't it?
What's that?
I said it's awesome, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I love it.
Right on. Well, we're at the end, dude.
Rock on.
All right, we're rolling out. I'll catch you later.
See you later, man.